But Jo had her own eyes to take care of, and feeling that they could not be trusted, she prudently kept them on the little socks she was knitting, like a model maiden aunt. A stealthy glance now and then refreshed her, like sips of fresh water after a dusty walk, for the sidelong peeps showed her several propitious omens. Mr. Bear's face had lost the absent-minded expression, and looked all alive with interest in the present moment, actually young and handsome, she thought, forgetting to compare him with Laurie, as she usually did strange men, to their great detriment. Then he seemed quite inspired, though the burial customs of the ancients to which the conversation had strayed might not be considered an exhilarating topic. Jo quite glowed with triumph when Teddy got quenched in an argument, and thought to herself as she watched her father's absorbed face, how he would enjoy having such a man as my professor to talk with every day. Lastly, Mr. Bear was dressed in a new suit of black, which made him look more like a gentleman than ever. His bushy hair had been cut and smoothly brushed, but didn't stay in order long, for in exciting moments he rumpled it up in the droll way he used to do. And Jo liked it rampantly erect better than flat, because she thought it gave his fine forehead a Jove-like aspect. Poor Jo, how she did glorify that plain man as she sat knitting away so quietly, yet letting nothing escape her, not even the fact that Mr. Bear actually had gold sleeve buttons in his immaculate wristbands. Dear old fellow, he couldn't have got himself up with more care if he'd been going a-wooing, said Jo to herself. And then a sudden thought born of the words made her blush so dreadfully that she had to drop her ball and go down after it to hide her face. The manoeuvre did not succeed as well as she expected, however, for though just in the act of setting fire to a funeral pile, the professor dropped his torch, metaphorically speaking, and made a dive after the little blue ball. Of course they bumped their heads smartly together, saw stars, and both came up flushed and laughing, without the ball, to resume their seats, wishing they had not left them. Nobody knew where the evening went to, for Hannah skilfully abstracted the babies at an early hour, nodding like two rosy poppies, and Mr. Lawrence went home to rest. The others sat round the fire, talking away, utterly regardless of the lapse of time, till Meg, whose maternal mind was impressed with a firm conviction that Daisy had tumbled out of bed and Demi set his nightgown afire, studying the structure of matches, made a move to go. "We must have our sing in the good old way, for we are all together again once more," said Jo, feeling that a good shout would be a safe and pleasant vent for the jubilant emotions of her soul. They were not all there, but no one found the words thoughtless or untrue, for Beth still seemed among them, a peaceful presence, invisible, but dearer than ever, since death could not break the household league that love made dissoluble. The little chair stood in its old place, the tidy basket, with the bit of work she left unfinished when the needle grew so heavy, was still on its accustomed shelf. The beloved instrument, seldom touched now, had not been moved, and above it Beth's face, serene and smiling, as in the early days, looked down upon them, seeming to say, "Be happy. I am here."
"Play something, Amy. Let them hear how much you have improved," said Laurie, with pardonable pride in his promising pupil. But Amy whispered with full eyes, as she twirled the faded stool, "Not tonight, dear. I can't show off tonight." But she did show something better than brilliancy or skill, for she sang Beth's songs with a tender music in her voice which the best master could not have taught, and touched the listeners' hearts with a sweeter power than any other inspiration could have given her. The room was very still when the clear voice failed suddenly at the last line of Beth's favorite hymn. It was hard to say, "Earth hath no sorrow that heaven cannot heal." And Amy leaned against her husband, who stood behind her, feeling that her welcome home was not quite perfect without Beth's kiss. "Now we must finish with Mignon's song," "'For Mr. Bear sings that,' said Joe, before the pause grew painful. And Mr. Bear cleared his throat with a gratified "Ahem!" as he stepped into the corner where Joe stood, saying, "'You will sing with me? We go excellently well together.' A pleasing fiction, by the way, for Joe had no more idea of music than a grasshopper. But she would have consented if he had proposed to sing a whole opera, and warbled away blissfully regardless of time and tune. It didn't much matter, for Mr. Bear sang like a true German, heartily and well, and Joe soon subsided into a subdued hum, that she might listen to the mellow voice that seemed to sing for her alone. "'Know'st thou the land where the citron blooms?' used to be the professor's favourite line, for das Land meant Germany to him. But now he seemed to dwell with peculiar warmth and melody upon the words, "'There, O there, might I with thee, O my beloved, go.' And one listener was so thrilled by the tender invitation that she longed to say she did know the land and would joyfully depart thither whenever he liked. The song was considered a great success, and the singer retired covered with laurels. But a few minutes afterward, he forgot his manners entirely and stared at Amy putting on her bonnet, for she had been introduced simply as my sister, and no one had called her by her new name since he came. He forgot himself still further when Laurie said, in his most gracious manner, at parting, "'My wife and I are very glad to meet you, sir. Please remember that there is always a welcome waiting for you over the way.' Then the professor thanked him so heartily and looked so suddenly illuminated with satisfaction that Laurie thought him the most delightfully demonstrative old fellow he ever met. "'I too shall go, but I shall gladly come again if you will give me leave, dear madam, for a little business in the city will keep me here some days.' He spoke to Mrs. March, but he looked at Joe, and the mother's voice gave as cordial an assent as did the daughter's eyes, for Mrs. March was not so blind to her children's interest as Mrs. Moffat supposed. "'I suspect that is a wise man,' remarked Mr. March, with placid satisfaction, from the hearth-rug, after the last guest had gone. "'I know he is a good one,' added Mrs. March, with decided approval, as she wound up the clock. "'I thought you'd like him,' was all Joe said, as she slipped away to her bed. She wondered what the business was that brought Mr. Bear to the city, and finally decided that he had been appointed to some great honour somewhere, but had been too modest to mention the fact. If she had seen his face when, safe in his own room, he looked at the picture of a severe and rigid young lady, with a good deal of hair, who appeared to be gazing darkly into futurity, it might have thrown some light upon the subject, especially when he turned off the gas and kissed the picture in the dark. Chapter 44 My Lord and Lady. "'Please, Madam Mother, could you lend me my wife for half an hour? The luggage has come, and I've been making hay of Amy's Paris finery, trying to find some things I want,' said Laurie, coming in the next day to find Mrs. Lawrence sitting in her mother's lap as if being made the baby again. "'Certainly. Go, dear. I forgot that you have any home but this.' And Mrs. March pressed the white hand that wore the wedding ring, as if asking pardon for her maternal covetousness. "'I shouldn't have come over if I could have helped it. But I can't get on without my little woman any more than a weathercock can without wind.' suggested Joe, as he paused for a simile. Joe had grown quite her own saucy self again since Teddy came home. "'Exactly, for Amy keeps me pointing due west most of the time, with only an occasional whiffle round to the south, and I haven't had an easterly spell since I was married. Don't know anything about the north, but am altogether salubrious and balmy. Hey, my lady?' "'Lovely weather so far. I don't know how long it will last.' "'But I'm not afraid of storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship. "'Come home, dear, and I'll find your bootjack. "'I suppose that's what you are rummaging after among my things.' "'Men are so helpless, Mother,' said Amy, with a matronly air, which delighted her husband.